Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to Good Morning Hospitality, your one-stop shop for the latest news, noteworthy trends, and thought-provoking discussions across the industry. From hotels and short-term rentals to all things travel and hospitality, you'll find each episode equips you with the information that you need to start your week. Join us on Good Morning Hospitality every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, hello. Happy Eve or first day of
Burma.
Burma.
Yes, I am here in New Orleans. I'll be heading over to the convention center soon. So if you're in New Orleans, come and find me and say hi. I'm glad it's in one of our cities. I got to, it's like fun to show people around and go out to eat.
You get to host. You get to play your classic brandy wine experience a little bit. Let's go.
Yeah.
New Orleans is probably my favorite conference location city.
Yeah.
I can tell you it's not Orlando and it's not Vegas.
I agree.
Yeah. I don't know. Vegas was kind of fun, but Orlando for sure. No more. Let's stop putting conferences in Orlando. It'd be great. But it's good to see you guys again. Happy Monday. Super exciting day today because we've had a pretty busy week. Last week, this week, all the above. But before we get into all the nitty-gritty announcements, we have one in particular that I've been holding on to. So all of our live viewers are tuning in and just now hopping on LinkedIn and YouTube. We launched into Europe. What's up? GMH is going global, so we want to congratulate Leo Walton, one, on joining Good Morning Hospitality Europe, but also, two, he just texted me this morning, his wife just had their second child, so they are
just a few hours ago.
It's just literally just a few hours ago. So their episode tomorrow comes out 8 a.m. Central Europe time. Every Tuesday, that's going to be the time for anyone that's in Europe listening. We are so excited to finally have some content focused around stuff that is relatable and in the time zone that you're in. So we're pumped. Outside of that, that's my big announcement. Anything else for you guys?
There's a specific PMS that Brandy uses called Guesty, who I'm sure we're all aware of, raised $130 million at, I believe, a $900 million valuation. So a monster round for the industry. We've talked about it a lot on this show. The consolidation continues. I can only imagine Guesty has three or four acquisitions they're waiting to announce once that money hits the bank. But the big get bigger and the small get gobbled up or go away.
And hopefully I'm excited that some of that money is going into making my life easier.
Some products.
Sure, you have a list for them that you've sent over.
I'll make sure to send the wish list. I'm like, you know, now that I see you had the raise, here's what we want.
Here's my demands.
And then last announcement, the Shorties Awards the voting closes this week. So make sure you get your votes in for that.
Yes, you'll hear tomorrow. A couple of our GMH crews have been nominated. So definitely selfishly vote for them because we want all of GMH to be representing. But that's just me. I'm a little prideful.
Storied. Okay. We're in there.
Yeah, so, yeah, and storied. Yeah. Shout out to you guys. Awesome. Well, okay. So this is exciting. We rarely have guests on the show, but when we do, we really want to make sure it makes sense. And one of the things that really does make sense beyond just having Madeline List from Focus Right on the show is our partners at Sojo. Everything just makes sense when you partner with them. You get amazing automation and amenities delivered right to your vacation rental. And we're going to dive a little bit into data today. And Sojo has the data of increasing your turnovers, efficiency, and cleanliness rating scores by 10% or more when you use Sojo, because it's so dang easy for your housekeepers to use. So go to getsojo.com/GMH to get 30 days for free. All right, you two, are we ready to bring on Madeline?
Yes.
Let's do it. Here we go. Let's give her a warm welcome. Madeline, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Live from New York City.
You had to wake up really early for this one, huh?
You guys treat me well for this. I feel like I'm on the right end of the time zone situation.
Yes. Will gets the short end of the stick.
Hey, at least I'm not on, you know, the West Coast fully. I get at least an hour buffer, which is great. When I was on the West Coast, it was a little bit of a struggle because it's like that 1 hour does make a difference, but I love the show enough. Anyways, Madeline, let's jump into the topic of the hour, which is, I like the little play on words, you know, focusing on economic and cultural sustainability.
I saw that. You know, I saw that.
Eye roll.
the marketing was on point. You guys made it easy. But I want to jump in. Can you, one, introduce yourself, like high level 30 to 60 second overview, and then we'll jump into the topics at hand from your guys' recent study.
Sure. I am a senior research analyst at a company called Focusrite. And for those who don't know us, we are a market intelligence firm that specializes in travel, tourism, hospitality. Our business touches various parts of travel, from the event space and conferences to journalism with our branch Focus Wire. But for me, I'm on the research side. And what I do at Focusrite is primarily quantitative research. So looking at very large numbers of people, usually consumers, sometimes also in that B2B space. And I basically have a really cool opportunity that every year I have a slight switch in where I focus. I have a specialty in short-term rentals in general. But last year, I got to take a very big amount of time to do this project that focused on sustainability and travel from this very holistic perspective. So that's what we're here to talk a little more about for the deep dive from that report.
I love it. And for the listeners who are not tuning into the live, we always want to make sure you're getting the most value from the listening experience. So grab the link in the show notes. You can then grab the report from Focusrite to then follow along if you're interested and see more that we don't cover. I just want to make sure we plug that just to give you guys the visual that you won't be able to see on the actual video recording. So, Madeline, where is the best place to start? That's what I want to know. What was a favorite piece for you when it came to building out this whole report?
I think the best place to usually start has to do with the definition of sustainability and travel, to just get the definitional pieces out to begin with, because the word is thrown around a lot. And I think in the industry, there are a lot of people who understand it well, but there are even some gaps on the back end with how people look at that. And from the research, one of the things we gathered is that as much as it's a hot buzzword, sustainable travel in the media, the regular consumer, the regular traveler, they really don't know what it means. So for us, the general idea of what sustainability is for travel is a model that you can keep doing in perpetuity without affecting the livability or the visitability of a place for years to come. So that can be on the environmental side with things like resource management or controlling waste. It can be with things like over tourism and making sure that there aren't so many crowds that it overruns the infrastructure in a place. But it can also mean making sure that culturally and economically a tourism model is sustainable and can be continually executed in a place without the model essentially collapsing on itself or failing to work.
You mentioned the sustainability of certain locations and maybe even potentially in some cases like Amsterdam, trying to drive guests away. They've got a campaign called the Stay Away campaign to try and keep particularly British males out of the city. First of all, how effective do you think something like that is? There's something called the Streisand effect, where the more you talk about it, the more people think about it. And then now British males want to go to Amsterdam. So is there a swing of the pendulum back in the wrong direction for them? Or how effective is a campaign like that?
So I don't have Amsterdam specific visitation numbers in front of me right now, but what I can say is that destination marketing in general, it's a marathon, because Amsterdam didn't become like this overnight. It didn't become such a hot spot for this partying in one campaign either. And I doubt one campaign is going to single-handedly reverse the situation, but it's indicative mostly of a larger pattern that instead of just trying to pull in anyone to a destination who could possibly want to come, they're specifying more an ideal kind of tourist that they want, an ideal kind of person that they want in the city. And they're trying to weed out people who don't fall into that category.
Yeah. I think that's funny. Like, most places want the same type of like customer or traveler to visit them. I don't think anyone's like, we want the people that are going to come and get wasted and destroy their city on their stag nights. But this happened in Miami Beach. They had this national campaign of like, we're breaking up with spring break. And they had really intense like police presence and like barricades to prevent you from going down certain streets and things like that. And there wasn't a lot of like, you know, there wasn't a lot of craziness, but then it was like the main kind of Ocean Drive, South Beach area of the city. And the month of March is when you make all your money to get you through slow season. And we talked to one like smaller hotel on Ocean Drive, and they were down like 30 to 40% for that month. So it's just interesting to see, like, I totally understand why places want to like deviate from people who are destroying their city. But to your point, like, these places didn't become like that overnight. And I think the responses tend to swing really far in one direction to try to correct it. And then there's all these other ripple effects that have happened to like actual the locals, like the local businesses who are also potentially hurt.
Absolutely. And there's a technical best practice that we can talk about here. It's not always helpful, because some destinations are beyond accessing this best practice. But ideally, when you're in the developing stages of making a tourism plan for a destination, you want to consider what the kind of natural caps will be for the destination and what is going to happen if a place becomes too popular, or measures to put in place more preemptively to prevent a place from getting so popular or from even potentially attracting the quote unquote wrong type of tourist who isn't treating the destination with respect. That is a situation that it, to some extent, the ship has sailed for some of the destinations that are dealing with this. And I think we see how drastic the effects can be of not planning for this early, because then all of a sudden, if the clampdown does work, you can be down 30 to 40% in 1 month. That's a really difficult situation for local businesses to deal with as well. So I know that saying this is a little bit like shutting the barn door when the horses are out, but the best practice theoretically when a place can access it is to plan earlier than later so that the clampdown doesn't have to be this dramatic.
Yeah. And shifting gears a little bit here, some of the charts that you guys have published go through the difference of how sustainability relates to food versus how it relates to accommodations. Can you jump into that a little bit?
Sure. So one of the things that was really important for us to kind of define and understand when we did surveys and research about sustainability is truly how well travelers understood what it meant to travel sustainably on the level of different kinds of measures that they could take. And so a lot of the things that we measured, they had to do with supporting local businesses and how much people understood that buying from locally owned establishments or booking with locally owned establishments can really help a place, really help keep money in the community. But unfortunately, one of the things that we found is that, well, it's fortunate for the F&B side of the tourism business, but people loved the idea and were much more aware of the idea of buying locally sourced food or supporting locally owned restaurants. I think food gets people excited. It feels like a literal flavor of a place. However, for bigger ticket purchases, like booking with a locally owned hotel or even a locally owned tour agency, there was a lot less awareness of how helpful that could be for really supporting the local community and doing a big favor for the destination. And for us, it's a little bit of a red flag when that happens, because those purchases, they're bigger tickets. It's a bigger dollar amount. The money could go a little further. And so we love that people are excited about food. I think I'm more concerned about the drop off between food and awareness that booking with locally owned lodging could really be helpful.
Would you go ahead,
Will?
Let's say, would you consider locally owned lodging as in like a small boutique, or would even in like a franchise count? Does that like kind of walk me through what the definition of lodging side of like independent would be for you guys? Like, because I know people that own a Marriott, but they're not a corporate Marriott, you know?
It's interesting, because the way we worded it for this question was just staying at a locally owned hotel. We didn't quite get to the short-term rental level with that specific question. But then separately, we also asked about how much people even asked or checked or researched on their own to see if a place was locally owned. And again, F&B comes up if they ask about something to try to find out about the ownership or to even try to investigate. They're probably going to ask about food. They're probably going to ask where their meal is coming from or who owns the restaurant. So we're at a little bit of a stalwart there for now, because before we even get to that nitty gritty definition of franchise versus local ownership, we have to understand that the regular consumer who needs to book a place to stay, they're not necessarily asking. And so if it's not communicated to them, a lot of them just won't know.
Yeah. And so I guess in your research, were you asking like, what are the top like priorities when you're booking a local or when you're booking accommodation, and what was coming before the locally owned?
Almost everything else. So the way we designed that question, and we were a little sneaky about this, because we asked questions about why people booked a recent accommodation before we told them it was a sustainability study. We didn't want people to get blinded by that idea or maybe kind of exaggerate their own behaviors because of that. So the way we even asked the question was saying, if you're comparing two lodging options that already have similar location, similar comfort level, similar price, then what makes a difference after that? Because we know that those top things, they're always going to be the top. We don't need to establish once again that location is important in hospitality, you know? But the things that were really prominent to people, they weren't necessarily about whether the hotel was locally owned. Unfortunately, because people are looking towards other things. They really need the business to fit their core needs first. They want to make sure the Wi-Fi is good. They want to make sure they have scenic views where they are. They have the right amenities. So it's really important for anyone who's thinking of marketing themselves in the hospitality space, based off the fact they have local ownership, if they have green practices, you do have to meet other people's core needs first, because staying competitive on the core parts of hospitality, it's never going to be out of style, and it's not a replacement for being sustainable. You always have to meet the basic requirements that people have from a hospitality experience, and then you can focus on pushing that you're locally owned or pushing other practices.
Yeah, there was a Wall Street Journal article recently that David Krause got into, shout out Dave, about the differentiation, particularly in short-term rentals, where there's so much supply now, you actually have to differentiate. And similar with hotels, you need to tell the story of your property, of the people that own it. So I definitely buy into that. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that do it great today.
Yeah, I was going to also say, it's so funny to hear how many people talk about like hospitality, and then they immediately say like clean linens and like fast turnover and good communication. That's not good hospitality, because like speaking of that article, Michael, Dave's talking about the six-star experience, the basics, the necessities of a vacation rental or a hotel or even a restaurant nowadays, people consider it to be hospitality to like do the job that they're hired to do or being paid to do by the customer, the guest, the diner, the whatever. But in reality, like those are the basics. Like you, if you can't master the basics at all of like good linens, that's not like a hospitality piece. That's just part of the job. The everything else kind of piece is what really matters. But I'm really curious, and I want Michael to kind of set you up on this one for the social media aspect. So Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a segment in the data that says social media giveth and social media taketh away. Describe
that's my title, by the way.
I love it.
I was surprised my editor tolerated my tolerated my dramatic subtitles. Shout out to him. But the social media is a really interesting tool when it comes to the sustainable space or thinking about sustainable tourism models, because on the one hand, it is such a valuable marketing tool, and we can't underestimate that at all. It's been so useful for a lot of businesses and destinations as well in the hospitality space to have a really cost-effective way of getting their brand out there, of getting awareness. There are some moments where people have really been able to pick up a lot of attention and a lot of fame by using social media and leveraging those platforms right. So it's tremendously useful in our travel space. However, there are times when social media just goes a bit out of control, and that can lead to glorifying people doing things that maybe they shouldn't, doing the hikes that are illegal, the influencers who will climb over a fence to get the right picture on something that's maybe it's private property, maybe it's shut off to the public. And when we did this study, we sat down for interviews with various DMOs from really all over the world. And they're so appreciative of the marketing opportunity that social media gives them. But on the other hand, there are times that many of them wish they could hit pause, because it can also be this megaphone for bad behavior, or it can drive too much traffic to certain places that can't handle them. And there are times when it leaves people feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think we had talked about this last year, but like a spate of people carving their names into like the Colosseum and the Leaning Tower of Pisa. And it's like young kids, well, honestly, late teens, so they should know better. But it's, you're right, because a lot of that stuff gets posted and circulated, and it is giving a megaphone in the wrong direction. And then I also think about kind of like the influencer destination of the year, how like you had like Tulum blew up. It was this kind of like quaint bohemian part of Mexico that was like had the Tulum vibes that are really famous, but now it's really overrun. It's a kind of like a mass produced version of its former self. And so I think a lot of destinations fall into that when they get the spotlight of social media and all the influencers kind of shown on it. It's good. It's hard to balance that appropriately.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because the White Lotus destination with Sicily, right, is one of the top destinations of the year. They just announced the next one somewhere in Asia. I forget off the top
Thailand.
Of my head.
I think Thailand.
Is it? Yeah. So that place is going to start getting booked out like crazy, I'm sure. But it's a vicious cycle, isn't it? So Tulum goes through that, and then locals invest more money. And then it becomes a party destination, and then they start to push it away, and then who loses the most is the locals, right? So there's definitely some cons in getting too big too quick, unless you're a super high-end five-star location where price is prohibitive to that type of traveler, like the White Lotus Sicily destination. So maybe an interesting lesson in keeping prices high and keeping the British male stag parties away. I love that, because I lived in Europe for a while, and a lot of times people thought I was British because I would spoke English and I guess I look British. But as soon as I said I was American, particularly in Eastern Europe, they were somewhat relieved that I wasn't like one of these British male stag party kind of guys, which is rare for a European to love meeting an American, but that's the difference of Western Europe versus Eastern Europe. So
yeah, I was also, when we were there, just like hordes and hordes of the American study abroad kids just like freaking out that they can, you know, they're in, I don't know, Barcelona and they're able to drink because they're 19 and just going crazy. And you're like, just tone it down a little bit. Respect. And I think that this is like, this whole topic though really is so interesting because it is so nuanced and delicate, because a lot of these places depend on tourism as their main form of income, their more main revenue streams. And so sometimes like you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you, but then you don't know how to like wrangle in that hand and how to control it. So yeah, I think it's, you know, you have your theory of how they should kind of direct things when they're noticing that they're becoming a kind of a destination. But for these cities that are well into the thick of things, I guess from your research, do you have any kind of broad theories on how they can rein things back in?
Yeah, I have some. I have some points that I see various destinations already doing, because that is the realistic situation, right? And a lot of times there were original plans made that just didn't consider how much international travel would blow up, or sometimes even, we're talking domestic destinations that got blown up too because it became more accessible. But first of all, one of the things that destinations are doing is just enhancing a lot of the communication touch points throughout the trip, making sure that people know at various points, whether it's at the airport with something they have to look at in customs, or whether it's through a marketing campaign that they'll see throughout, whether it's from a tour guide or someone at the front desk of their hotel telling them some tips on expectations or how to behave. They're trying to sew in a lot more education throughout various points in the trip. Sometimes it's just about having more enforcement mechanisms that could mean something, just like in a place where there might be people hopping a fence, to have more staff available there to kind of actively deter people. Or sometimes it gets into the penalty area where they just start to really enact fines and start to really make sure that they make examples out of people who aren't behaving well. Obviously, that's kind of a tough marketing choice in terms of how you want to present the destination. Nobody likes to get fined on vacation, but they also don't want to send the message that certain disrespectful behaviors are okay to do just because you're on vacation. So that's certainly a tough one too. And then the one that we had touched on before is also changing the marketing, changing the image. And pricing can be a big one also, which of course opens up a conversation about, does it cut certain people with lower budgets out if prices are being raised to deter certain people? So I think that's an interesting conversation worth having. But unfortunately, there's a part of human nature where when something is priced higher, we tend to value it more and treat it differently. So pricing is definitely used as a strategy there.
For sure. I mean, we use that in short-term rentals when you're trying to, you know, if you have a low price, high occupancy strategy, you know that your property is going to get a lot more wear and tear. So it can be a bit icky, but it does work.
So last question or statement topic for us, it was towards the end of the data, but I think it's not going to come as a surprise to anybody. Travelers from the US and the UK are less culturally oriented in selecting their destinations, but they still are interested in those purchases helping and boosting the local economy. Can you dive into why, any thesis on why that may be?
One is that in the US in particular, they might just put nature in front of culture and priorities, because there were some areas where we saw people in the US really saying nature, natural features were towards the top of their list in terms of what they sought out in a destination. So some of it might be a priority area, and especially for people traveling to somewhat more rural places, maybe the nature is coming in front of the culture for that. But in another way, there's kind of a market priority where in the US, when you compare it to European countries, they're not chasing a cultural experience quite as much. that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't be incentivized to really get excited about it or treat a destination well or respect the local culture and traditions. Of course, we're not like, I don't abide by any of the stereotypes about US travelers being, you know, menaces to society or anything like that. That's not what's coming out from the data. However, really? I think that there's a... You know, awareness about a lot of what it means to really support a community or to really travel sustainably, as much as it's talked about more in Europe, it's not reflecting in the data in terms of European travelers knowing more on the whole. That was a really interesting piece to it, that there's more buzz for sure. And there are people who are louder about it, but more buzz doesn't translate to tourists who are more aware.
Yeah, I also kind of think that there's a difference underneath that. And I think you'd have to do a much deeper study for this, but you know, you have the discrepancies in vacation time and what people are using that for. If you have 4 weeks, you're like, okay, we can hit all the cultural spots. We can see every church in France or whatever we need to see. And then we can end it on the southern coast and be at the beach. Whereas if, you know, American vacation time is still pretty tight. So you might be resort in Cancun, beach by noon. I just like hang out, get my tan. My kids are like occupied at like the built-in kids area. Like, I think it might just be like, what are your priorities with the allotted time that you have? And culture might not be high on the list when you have a shorter amount of time.
Culture is on the bottom of my list when I'm on vacation. I'm on the beach.
Well, part of it's also growing up around the culture. Like Europeans know how to respect the inside of a church, right? You know, because the one down the street's from the 1500s. So there's probably a bit of a experience of growing up around that sort of stuff. But I think that thesis is probably spot on, Brandy, that you just try and pack so much in. I remember when I was in my early 20s traveling with my best friend through Europe, we went to like 5 different cities in 9 days and just tore it up, right? So like you just pack it all in.
Yeah, you're not like
this absorbing. Is a great advocacy campaign for more PTO. We start with this point and we got to keep pushing until we get more standardized US PTO.
I'm here for it.
Amen. Yeah, as Jamie Lane's about to take a European vacation in July, about 4 weeks off. Lucky son of a gun. Jealous. Demi from AirDNA, if you're tuning in, start giving less vacations for, you know, chief economists, just in my opinion.
Well, that's against what we all just advocated for, Will. Madeline, any final thoughts or anything that we didn't cover that you that jumped out that you really want to discuss?
My final thought that I like to impart is just for the operator side, for the people who are locally owned and operated and who are really proud of their story, just make sure you are loud about it throughout the shopping and booking process. This can still be something that's super attractive. Differentiating through having a local story is still so important once you already have those core hospitality principles that are already there. Just make sure it's super clearly communicated, because we are in a tourism market where people care about it. If it's put right in front of them, they're just not going to take the extra research step to seek it out.
Yeah, I love it. That's super good. Well, Madeline, for the people that are tuning in live, what's a good place to send them? I put the link for this report specifically in the LinkedIn post. We have quite a few people on Twitter right now, I'm seeing, but I'll go put it in there. And then, of course, the show notes. But anything else that you like want to promote in the sense of for people to learn more, connect with you, et cetera, we would love to give them all the info.
Yep, I'm Madeline List on LinkedIn. If you want to connect over this or send me a message, you can go to focusright.com to access our research and buy reports a la carte or sign up for open access. And then we also have 2 big travel events coming up for anyone who's interested in networking with us more directly in person. We have our European conference in Barcelona coming up in June. And then in November, we will be in Phoenix for our global conference.
Yes, and I know we can't wait to see you guys there. It's going to be a fun event. We're super excited to to be there in person with you guys. It's great to do the remote recordings like this, but in person just has that nice little touch to it. So
we're pumped. Excited.
Yes. It's going to be great. Well, you heard it here first. All the Good Morning Hospitality listeners, make sure you grab all the links in the show notes, the posts, etc. Follow, like, and subscribe to all things Focusrite, Focuswire, and of course, follow Madeline. Give her some love and show her that the GMH crew is big and proud. Outside of that, Michael, Brandy, I hope you guys have a great week. Brandy, have fun at VRMA.
Thank you.
Anything that you're looking forward to while you're there? You got like a to-do list or a checklist to get?
I have a mental checklist. I'm just excited. It's been a while since I've seen all of our industry friends. So it's always good to catch up and hear what's going on with everyone.
I love it. Well, the FOMO is real. I kind of wish I went to this one, but at the end of the day, I'm also thankful for getting my full 8 hours of sleep at night. So yeah, it's going to be good. All right. Well, you heard it here first. Slick Talkers. Wow. I'm on two different podcasts. GMH, thank you so much. Like and subscribe. We'll see you guys on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and next week on Monday as well.